Okay, so we are here again in the happy house.
Three questions tonight. We'll see which ones we get through. And then we'll call it a night. So this week, they all seem to be Inyana Dioma. I was thinking about Tu Bishvat and new fruits, and recently read about this new type of apple called the Cosmic Crisp. Is it kosher? Can I own a Cosmic Crisp tree? Would I make a Shechiyano on a Cosmic Crisp apple when I eat it? That's question number one. Question number two.
What is a Cosmic Crisp apple?
Oh, that's part of question number one. Question number two. There were a bunch of news stories about the coronavirus in China and its impact on worldwide travel, economics, and health. In fact, there was even discussion that the Olympic Games, scheduled for Tokyo this summer, would be canceled because of the coronavirus. Olympic authorities went on record to be clear that they were not canceling the games. Got me thinking, can one attend the games if he or she is concerned about the coronavirus? And that, believe it or not, has dafyomi effects. Three, I went out to eat at a dairy restaurant recently. I saw the most delicious looking French onion soup and wanted to order it. When I asked the waiter about it, he told me that it's served in a freshly baked sourdough bowl. Am I allowed to order that? Is it bizui ochel? I guess using the bowl as bread, or the bread as a bowl. Is that mutter or is it not mutter? So I've got the French onion soup in the bread bowl. I've got coronavirus and cosmic crisp apples.
Apples.
So I want you, I've been looking all over New Jersey. Apparently, like, you have to be like a fancy schmancy Delancey person. But let me deal with Yossi's first question. What is a cosmic crisp apple? So in 1997 at Washington State University, they decided if we combine characteristics of pre-existing apples, in particular Honeycrisp apples and Enterprise apples, you can get the Honeycrisp's texture and juiciness and the late ripening and long storage of the Enterprise. And if you can combine them, you can get something fantastic. So they called it a Cosmic Crisp apple, and it's characterized by dark red skin, dense and firm flesh, a really good shelf life. It has a lot of light dots known as lenticels against the wine red skin, which led people to think of galaxies, which led it to be called
Cosmic
or Cosmic Crisps. So when the New York Times went through this apple about 4 or 5 months ago, they described the apple as, quote, dramatically dark, richly flavored, and explosively crisp and juicy, making it the most promising and important apple of the future. It's also referred to as firmer than the Honeycrisp, but not too firm, and it's high in both sugar and acidity, making it far superior to the Red Delicious, Gala, and Fuji varieties as well. I realize I'm sitting in front of two dentists. High acidity means it beats lollipops, right? So the majority of these trees are all relatively new. 600,000 trees left nurseries in 2017, and they were planted in orchards throughout Washington State. So here's my question. Is it kosher? Is there anything I have to worry about? Can I own the tree? Can I make a Shechiyano? Do I make a Shechiyano? Thoughts?
The only thing I think of is Orla.
Ah! So let's talk about Orla. Right? The Torah via Parshas Vayikra tells us, V'araltem Orla so es perio, it's in Perek Yitest Parasak Chav Gimel. And the Gemara Pesachim on Daf Chav Pei Zaman Aleph adds that in addition to the fact that you can't, Shalosh Shanim Arilim Lo Yeachel, not only can you not eat it, so the Gemara also adds that there's an Isser Hana, because it says, V'araltem Orla so es perio, that there's something extra over here. And that's the way it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch and Yerideya. And it should just be pointed out, is that the years are counted from the beginning of the planting, not when the fruit begins to appear. So that's important for us to remember.
But if it's planted in a nursery, then it's not really...
Oh, so we have to figure that out. And what happens when I move it? Is that a new process? So what gets included in the Isser of Orla? Well, it's the fruit and all the parts. The seeds, the peels, the skin, the outer shell, the leaves, the vines, the stalks, anything that's... anything that's edible is included, right? And So the fact is, it's the fruit and the parts, right? But the leaves, the vines, the stalks, those are not included in orla, which is why sugar cane doesn't contain orla. My son is crazy about something called hearts of palm. Hearts of palm is not a fruit, and so therefore it's not subjected to orla, right? So when do we start counting 3 years? So the halacha is 3 years is pretty flexible, right? Depending on the time the tree is planted. When do we begin to count trees? You begin from Rosh Hashanah, right? That's when you start counting. We're talking about cosmic crisp apples. And according to the halacha, if a tree is planted 45 days before Rosh Hashanah, which is when? Tu B'Av, right? So then, as soon as Rosh Hashanah comes, it's in his second year. But if it was planted 44 days, so you have to wait an extra year. That's the process. It should also be understood that when we talk about the apples, so when we talk about a fruit is something that has an edible seed that bears a structure of a plant, right? There are two types. There's something called a perennial, and then there's something that's called an annual. What's a perennial? It's something that a perennial is a plant that lives for 2 years or more. What's an annual? Right. This is going to be important to us, for those of us who are studying the daf, because in the next couple of days we're going to get into the differentiation between brachos. And which two brachos is this important to help define? Eitz and a hadama, right? So therefore, a banana is halachically a vegetable, horticulturally a fruit. But therefore, the bracha, because it's a because it's an annual, a banana, the bracha on a banana is bori pri adama. So it also would follow that a banana plant, otherwise known as a banana tree, is not subjected to the rules of orla, right? If it doesn't produce fruit for 3 years, or if fruit is produced in less than a year, then you're not subjected to orla. This was pretty made pretty clear about 500 years ago in world history. The Rabbanim of Tzfat were asked about something called a bendigen. What's a bendigen? You have no idea, I have no idea. But if I turn to the doctor and I asked him, do you know what chatzilim are? He will turn to you and say to you,
eggplant.
Right. And so the question was, the Rabbanim of Tzfat, now remember, 500 years ago, the Orthodox Jewish community in the land of Israel was kind of pretty heavily centered in Tzfat. And Halacha was, not only was Kabbalah pretty active over there, Rabbi Yosef Cairo was living there. I mean, he wasn't living there then, but you know, his influence was still alive at that point in time. And so the question came up, right, to the older Rabbanim of Tzfat, what's the deal with this bendigin, or the chatzilim? Right? And they discovered that these big purple plants were born within a year of the planting of the tree. And we noticed that what? The quality of the chatzilim went down in the second year, and in the third year it got even worse. So the question was, is it subjected to the rules of orla? And so the Rabbanim of Tzfat said, since the trees were born, so gave fruit so fast, and the decline happened so fast, chatzilim are not fruit, they are
vegetables.
Birke Yosef says that it was pointed out to Rav Yosef Cairo, and he said the Ariya Kadosh ate chatzilim. So therefore, they must be kosher. Yet, the chatzilim never made it to the fourth year. They were gone by the third year. Ergo, the Beis Yosef says, it must be if the Ariya Kadosh was eating eggplant, right, must be that it's not subjected to the rules of Orla. There is a very brand new mall that exists up the turnpike. It's known as the American Dream. Who owns the American Dream Mall? The Germasiums. Before the Germasiums went into the mall business, they were in the papaya business. How do I know this? There was a Gon Rav Shmuel Germasium. And the question came up to Rav Shmuel Germasium about this weird fruit called a papaya. And so Rav Shmuel Germasium and the Mari Chalavo cite a situation where they say if a tree brings fruit within a year of planting, then that fruit is not a fruit, it's a vegetable. And so therefore, because we plant papaya, and papaya can be harvested within 8 to 10 months of its planting, I guess germasiums generally make things move faster than they move in their natural habitat. Ergo, a mall that was sitting fallow in its building stages for 20 years, when the germasiums got involved, it moved rather quickly, a little bit more than a year, but it bore fruit. So they figured out that since the papaya gives out fruit so quickly, just like the eggplant, the papaya is considered a vegetable. The bracha on papaya, of course, would be hadama, but more importantly, for our conversation, it's not subjected to the rules of orla. So that's the second thing we have to understand. So
issue that is adama.
The papaya is adama, yes. So fruit doesn't have to grow on a woody tree to be subjected to orla, because I know a fruit that grows on something called a little bit more bendy called a vine, right? And what is that? Grapes. Grapes are subjected to the rules of orla. What about kiwi? So kiwi grows on a vine, right? However, the vines are perennials, which means that they're there for extended period, and so therefore they normally should be subjected to the rules of orla. But the Star K reports that since the kiwi plant needs 3 to 5 years before it actually gives fruit, orla is not a problem. Okay, why do I bring all this up? Because we have to figure out, are these apple trees subjected to orla? So the general...
Why aren't strawberries aids?
I guess, when do strawberries, when they're planted, give off fruit?
Right away, but they're annuals.
Okay, but
they're perennial.
Yes, but if they give off fruit within the first year,
it doesn't matter.
Right? Hence, it is a vegetable. Okay. Well, so what's the deal with an apple, right? The simple understanding is an apple's a fruit. I think we can all agree to that. Which should mean that if you plant an apple tree, what should happen? It should be subjected to the rules of orla. And these cosmic crisp, if the majority of them came out in 2017, they were being planted in major nurseries, then when they were supposed to hit the market in 2019 or early 2020, which means they were picked in 2019, what should have to happen? Why should we should have to be choshish
when,
for
when they were planted? But if they were 45 days before Rosh Hashanah in 2017, then we're good.
So if I walk around in the Shulchan, give me 12 seconds. If I walk around in the Shulchan Machne Yehuda, I look around and I realize I have to check every single station to make sure that the guy separated Trumos and Maestros. But I always thought when I was in America, when I walk into a fruit store, like, you know, unless you know that the product's from Israel, like, that's the way I was raised. You were raised differently, right? No, Doc? Dina? No? Right? You were told, like, whatever, that's the easy aisle where you don't have to look that hard was over there.
Go ahead. An apple tree doesn't really produce that many apples the first 3 years. It's just impossible.
So therefore, go ahead.
Therefore, if they're selling thousands and thousands of pounds of apple crisp, whatever they're selling, the crispy apples, they're more than...
But maybe the cosmic crisp I'm holding is from orla. Maybe it's all been floated into the market. Come back at me.
So good. The question is the one possible out of 100,000 apples that disqualify all?
So tell me why I'm wrong. Good. Come on, come back at me. There's something called a rove. Right? What's a rove? The majority. So what Doc is pointing out is, in general, when we deal with orla on the market, the generally accepted halacha is we don't have to worry about orla. And why is that? Because kol deparish, most things that are on the market, that come to the market, kol deparish, meruba parish, most things come from the rove. So,
a different situation.
Give me 12 seconds to explain. So if I pick up a red delicious apple, right, and I pick it up and I ask myself, is this orla? Well, when I think about the entirety of apples on the market today, the number of trees that may have a rove, right? This is unlikely. So therefore, Doc wants to argue, just like we say this in all other areas of halakha, we should say this for the cosmic Chris. But Yossi says,
different situation.
Tell him why.
Because we know all the cosmic crisps are 2 years old. So
no, we don't. No, we don't.
We know that. We know that certainly an overwhelming.
It was discovered in the late 1990s.
Yeah, but they were sitting in a lab in Washington State University. Right. That stuff's not on the market.
So the question is the trees that they grew for 10 years in the nursery so they could produce, mass produce these apples?
When I set the...
transfer them over...
Oh,
they consider their first year? I don't
know. So if it's grown in a pot, and then it's sent to a grove and it's planted in the orchard from the pot, so is it in a pot considered planting, or does it matter if it's an awesome
very good.
Or very good.
So that
specifically sapling or that tree already. It's like 8, 10 years old.
So listen to what the argument that's being put forward is. So Yossi says, wait a second. Here I have a reisa to my rov argument. What's the reisa? I have a weakness in the argument. All cosmic crisps, or the overwhelming number of cosmic crisps, have not hit the market until they were planted, 2017. Comes again to Doc and he says, wait a minute, Dr. Pinsker. The Doc comes along and he says, these trees, it's not like they were in the middle of nowhere. Yes, they left the lab and they were planted into nurseries in 2017 as an overwhelming number. But let's be honest, you know, there was something that was going on over here. So the question comes up, what is that status? So the truth is, you have to remember, what's a cosmic crisp? It's not a new breed. It is a... it's a hybrid of what? Pre-existing. They didn't sit there and it wasn't like they did.
They
what happens is a cosmic crisp began as a graft of a combo of these two other types. So the Ritva and Kiddushin on Daf Lamed Tes points out that in a graft that you have in Chutz Laaretz, the dinim of Orla are somewhat different than in Eretz Yisrael, there's no rule of Orla. And this is, by the way, Rav Ovadia in his Tu B'Shvat Sefer, which is really not about Tu B'Shvat, but more about the mitzvah. It's one page about Tu B'Shvat. One page, the entire volume, in Chazon Ovadia on Tu B'Shvat. And then there's a couple of pages on Orla, about 30 pages on Orla. The rest of the Sefer is on Helchos Brachos. So Rav Ovadia also says that in Eretz Yisrael, you have a basis for a kula, because if you're not 100% sure, and you have a suffix of Orla in Eretz Yisrael, you have room to be maker like you are in Chutz, like something in Chutz Laaretz. All cosmic crisp apples come from the same place. Where do they come from? Not Eretz Yisrael. They come from Washington State. And so therefore, it shouldn't have a problem of Orla. Now, even if it would have come from Eretz Yisrael, right?
What do you mean? Anything
that's
in Chutz Laaretz has no problem with Orla?
Huh? No. If I have a basis for a kula, because a graft, maybe it's not, a suffix.
Is every cosmic crisp plant
there are no graft, or
is the original a graft, and these are seeds from that tree?
So it sounds like the in order to create the cosmic crisps, they have to graft it on a rootstock.
So until every tree is grafted.
The originals that left.
The new ones, even the ones in the nursery, by definition.
So like I said, they're bnei banim, but since they come from something previously, they're not subjected to the rules of Orla. But now that we have a new problem, what's the new problem? It's a question of Kalayim. We're not allowed to take two different types and mix it together. So how come you? And if I do, is it subjected to the rules of Orla?
It's not Kalayim.
Why not?
Because they're apples.
Right. So what? They're two different types of apples.
But they could breed together. They're apples.
No. So by definition, they're what do they call it? It's apples to apples, just like the game. You can play a game, but the definition of kalayim is apples and pears.
Well, you can't have a cherry tomato.
Right. Well, cherry tomatoes may be a different issue.
Okay.
Right. Let's not get into it. But the fact of the matter is, apples to apples doesn't create a problem. And so therefore, you're not going to be subjected on the cosmic crisp to the laws of Orla. In fact, the whole issue is moot for a totally different reason. So how did I get into this whole issue? Somebody came up to me last week and brought me a copy of the link. And in the back of the link, not everything is just about pictures of the JC and all sorts of great things and ads that are in the paper. Some every now and then they bring something down. So they quote this fellow, I assume he's a rabbi, Rabbi Moshe Rosenberg, but not the Rabbi Moshe Rosenberg of Queens. He's a Chabad rabbi based out of Teaneck. So he said he was so excited that he found a way to get a hold of a cosmic crisp apple from his brother-in-law Shlema. And so, but then he got this whole shaila of Orla in his head. And Shlema called the company, and the company called back and said, quite honestly, this vice president explained that in order to ensure the quality of fruit, in the first 4 years of production of a fruit, they are not allowed to sell it. And so therefore, they said they've been planting Cosmic Crisp apples not since 2017, but the companies have been planting them in their massive chains of orchards since 2009.
Because they need to grow for 5, 6, 7 years before they can.
So the bigger question is, if I have a Cosmic Crisp tree that I buy in a nursery, will I need, and I plant it in my hillside backyard, right? Will I need to go ahead and be concerned about Orla then? So at that point in time, we have to consider perhaps, right, there may be a problem with me owning it, but of course that doesn't seem to be the case. Again, I may need to be considered, as far as the graft is concerned, I don't have to be concerned. Why? Because apples and apples are apples, right? There's no issue. As far as Orla, maybe I'll have to deal with the question of Orla, maybe not. There may be a basis to argue, yes,
that's
maybe.
With any tree that you plant.
That I plant myself. If I buy, right. But the ones on the market, do you have to be choshed? Says the doc, and I think he's true correctly. The answer is absolutely not. What about Tu B'Shvat is coming? What happens if I can get a hold? Target apparently sells them for $2.99 an apple, right? I can't find them in the Target. You have to special order it, right? What if I can find the Cosmic Crisp apple, right? Can I eat the Cosmic Crisp apple? And can I make a Shechiyanu on the Cosmic Crisp apple? So to eat it, the answer is, why not? What about, why not?
I'm not sure about the Shechiyanu.
Why not? Why yes, why no?
Because I know on Rosh Hashanah for many years, many people would eat regular pears during the year. They might take sekel pears and they make Shechiyanu on it, I think.
Yeah, but the question is, can I take a Basque pear? Let's say I eat, if you eat an Asian pear, just because you call it a pear, I don't think that makes it a pear. That's like saying, that's like saying, hapidus va pear, l'chai olamim.
Which is smaller, and then
so if I don't have Rome apples, I only eat Granny Smith, or I have a Macintosh, so that's all of a sudden it's a different mint, I can make Shechiyanu on it?
So, we
know. I'm not spending $3.99 on the Macintosh apple, but.
Right.
An apple's an apple.
So first of all, on grafted fruits, the question is, remember, this is a graft, right? On grafted fruits, the Ben Ishchai assumed that, we assume that you would not make a Shechiyanu.
It's not a graft like nectarine or like...
Okay.
It's a graft that's not a graft.
Right. So the question is, Rav Ovadia says, when there is a question... about a Shechiyanu, if you're, let's say you're eating
Shechiyanu on dates. Dates are all grafted.
Right, so the question is like this. If I'm eating something for the first time, right, for the first time, the entire type, brand new, for the first time, then you make a Shechiyanu, right? But if it's not first time in the season, we have a problem today in the United States, in Israel. My wife noticed this when we were in Israel. In Israel, things are cyclical. So you can't, when the blueberry season's in, you get the blueberries, and when the blueberries are not in, you know what you get? something else because you're not finding blueberries. We can find blueberries on the market all year round. We get, huh?
South American.
Right. We not have them. The South Americans have that. You don't get that type of import export out of Israel. Just doesn't happen.
Not yet.
Halavai Viter, because the fruit in Israel was so much, it was so much more exciting. That's what my wife said also. She noticed that right away. Huh?
Butter.
Okay. You think you'd find your butter faster, right? But so is the case. But here I think it's something totally different. If the name is the name, then it's not a new experience. So whereas I think it's cool to be able to say we got Cosmic Crisp apples. And if you can make Doc, if you can make it and put it in a bottle, that would really be impressive, right? For Tu B'Shvat. I want you to know I tried all week this week, but I haven't given up hope yet. But to say that I can make
you're looking at it the wrong way. You have to be in Washington State. You have your own business. You get these little bottles, and as the apple is starting to grow,
you shove it in the.
On it. And you put all these bottles on.
Okay.
And when they reach the right size, you cut them. And then you put vodka.
Okay. So I think as far as the Shachianu is concerned, the answer is no. You would not make a Shachianu. We eat apples, unless you never eat apples, which would be a problem because then what are you dipping into the honey? Right? So apples for the first night of Rosh Hashanah. Second night of Rosh Hashanah, find something else. Right? And that would be the way I think we would proceed as far as the Shachianu is concerned. And for Tu B'Shvat, I think you should use Tu B'Shvat fruit. Want to do one more? You have a choice between coronavirus and bread bowls.
Bread bowls.
Bread bowls. I went to, good, because that's the shorter of the two. I went out to eat in a dairy restaurant recently, and I saw the most delicious looking French onion soup and wanted to order it. When I asked the waiter about it, he told me it's served in a freshly baked sourdough bowl. Am I allowed to order that?
Why not?
Isn't that bizui ochel? I'm taking the soup, I'm pouring it into bread.
Who said you can't eat this bread afterwards?
Huh?
Who says you? Who,
the question is not who says I can't. Do I have to?
Well, think about it.
I make this big clumpy.
Yeah, then it's not bizui ochel.
Well,
because
one
second. You decide not to.
So first of all, look at what you're doing.
Saying,
we're building this big. I build this big sourdough loaf. Whenever someone orders French onion soup, I cut into it and I cut out this big huge. What I call it, scraping it out. Right? And then I take it, and when it comes to bread, we're more machmeh than we are with all other foods. Right? And now I got this thing. Am I allowed to throw that away?
You make croutons out of it.
Okay. So Doc says I have to make croutons out of it. It's not you do. You have to, according to what you're saying.
Your accountant says you have to make croutons out of it. Your bookkeeper says you have to make croutons out of it.
And what
restaurant
about...
Restaurant business is cutthroat.
Right. So... And then what happens to if most people? What if most people are not going to eat the bread?
Most people don't eat a lot of things that are served.
But it's but here I'm taking the bread, I'm turning it into a utensil, and then I'm leaving it over, and then most of the bread's going in the garbage. Am I allowed to do that? Let's say Shandy decides that she's having over the Ambenders Friday night, right? And she's going to serve the chicken soup in this beautiful. Challah bowl, right? With fresh croutons so that Wengers will come and eat too, right? Toasted and made beautifully, right? Do you all have to sit there and wolf down the bread also? Or maybe you can't do this at all because it's bizui ochel to the bread. So let's back. Maybe using a bread as a bowl is like, are you kidding me? You're not allowed to do that. So the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim Siman Kuf Ayin Aleph Sif Aleph says, that's ridiculous. A person can use bread for his needs so long as the need is not something that's disgusting. You know, we treat bread with a certain degree of seriousness, but as long as you don't do something that's disgusting. If it makes the bread disgusting, then you can't do it. So the Shulchan Aruch goes further to Sifim later in Sif Gimel and says that you can use bread in place of a spoon, which I think we all do, right? Right? But the key thing is that you have to eat the bread afterwards. Right? I think there's a whole market that didn't exist when I was younger. Today, when you talk about Shabbos food, right, there's a whole section of Shabbos food called dips. Right? What's the whole chop to the dips? You use your bread, you dip it in, right? You put a little...
That's the Gemara. You have the sour, milky thing that you would...
The kutach, kutach. Okay, but that's different because there you were creating some the kutach. What the bread was part of the ingredients to create the kutach. Without getting into it, it's actually quite disgusting. It's all moldy bread that went into the kutach, right? But that's without getting into it.
It's an antibiotic. It helps people.
Whatever you want to call it, that's like when you leave the bread over too long and you create antibiotics with a beautiful shade of blue green that it comes into. Yes, yes. But if it makes the bread disgusting, you can't. So you can use it as a spoon as long as you eat the bread afterwards. And then the Shulchan Aruch says, "V'amidaktikim." If you really want to be strict, right, you should eat the bread at the same time you're eating the soup, which is what most of us do with the dips, right? You go ahead and you eat it, and then you take a bite. So the Ramah adds that you need to eat the rest of the bread afterwards in order for it not to be a bizayon. The Mishnah Berurah explains what's this all about. So he explains that you can use the bread instead of a spoon, even l'chatchila. And why is that? Since you can use the bread for your needs as long as you eat it. So the fact is that once the food comes into your mouth, if I use the spoon, the bread as a spoon, then I'm not going to eat it afterwards. Unless if I do it, and then I walk away, I bench, I come back for Shalosh Shudas, I'm not sitting down again, picking up that piece of bread. Right? That's for sure not happening. Right? So, you know, eat it now or it's going to become a bizayim. Right? And then it becomes about tashkas. The Mishnah Berurah says that the medaktikin, they go one step further. You know what? Once somebody sucks on a piece of bread, right, and then takes it out of their mouth, the rest of us go, ooh, right? That piece of bread is not getting eaten again, right? So he says that that's why they eat the bread with each bite. Why is that? Says the Mishnah Berurah. But that way, when I'm eating the soup or whatever it is that I'm eating with the bread, the bread is not enhancing the soup. The soup is enhancing the bread. That for sure is not a problem. The Beis Yosef says, where do we get this halacha from? Beis Yosef says it's a brisa and Masechta Sof from Paragimo, halacha tazayin, where Rav Shimon Gamliel says that we don't use food, we don't use one food to consume another one unless we're eating both of them at the same time, because otherwise it's a zilzul, it's an embarrassment to the bread.
You can't use your Twizzlers as a straw.
Oh, so that's a good question. So is this? We'll see that, and we'll figure that out in a second. But if you eat a bit of the bread each time, it's not a problem because it's no different than dipping your bread into a dip. The bread isn't holding the dip. The dip is enhancing the taste of the bread, right? And it would follow back to our case that if the bread is discarded from the sourdough loaf in making the bowl, right, that bread should also be eaten. So if you cut out and carve out the bowl, the scooped out part should be, as Doc said, somehow utilized in food process. If you own a restaurant, well, now you know what you're sticking on top in the shelf on top of the Netilas and Dimes section, right? But if you're not working in a restaurant, maybe toast it, flavor it, and turn it into croutons. What about the medaktigen? So if I need to eat some bread with it, with every single piece of the soup, right? Can you imagine that? You're eating the soup and you rip into the bread. You know what's going to happen to you as you get lower down on the bread? Your pants are going to get, or your skirt's going to get quite dirty. Right?
It's good for your business.
Come on. What? So wait a minute.
The doctor came up a little crazy.
It's good for me, right? It's good in my business. So Rav Zilberstein was asked the question. He says, why is this any different than eating a sandwich?
What?
A sandwich. Why? Of course, he's in Israel, which means the classic sandwich is falafel, right? So, come on, that was like a give me.
Chocolate bread?
Right? What's bigger, chocolate bread or falafel? Let's ask somebody who knows Israel. Doc, if you had a choice to figure out which of the two is more indicative of Israeli culture, chocolate bread?
You're talking about little kids?
I'm talking about the country.
All right. Adults would eat
the falafel, thank you. So he says, Zilberstein says, a guy comes up to me and asks me, why am I allowed to eat a pita? Because the whole purpose of the pita is to hold the falafel. Isn't that a zilzul?
That's not true.
Why not?
Because you can get a pita plate.
Right, so Zilberstein says, no, the whole experience of falafel is the salad, the balls, and the bread.
It's correct.
He says that's the pita is not a vessel for the falafel balls and salad. It's part of the experience. Can you imagine a shawarma without the lacha, without the eish tanur?
Well, it's part of the experience. So, therefore, he said, you know, don't bring a proof one place to the other.
A wrap is really, nobody really going to eat a wrap unless there's something in it. A wrap, you know.
So don't turn it into a vessel, right? No, but
wrap,
so if I recall correctly, Rabbi Belsky was asked that question, and I think if we apply Silverstein's logic to Rabelsky over there, I think what you'll come out with is no. Nobody, it's not the question that you wouldn't eat the wrap on your own. Nobody goes out and eats a wrap on his own. But the fact is, the experience of a tuna wrap is different than the experience of tuna on a plate.
Exactly.
Right? It just is. Huh? No, nobody eats the wrap.
A lot of people would not eat the tuna off the plate because
it's not an experience. The two things, the combo of the salad of the wrap. I mean, I'm not going to do a food channel description, but the combo of the taste of the wrap coupled with the tuna. Now all of a sudden you have a chiddush. I had to go to a meeting in Federation today, so for the simpletons, the clergy, they put out some water and some coffee and tea. But whatever group was coming in after us, they were getting lunch. They were getting fancy stuff, right? They had like a gazunta thing coming in. It was all wraps. It was good for me because, you know what? First of all, not necessary. And second of all, it was dairy. Exactly. It was dairy. Dairy and fish, right? And I was standing. I'm looking at it. And I'm thinking about the share. Right. So I think what Rav Silverstein was trying to get across is that, and I think the answer to you in regard to the wrap, the experience of the wrap is not just an experience of, oh, now I don't need a fork. I think there's an experience to this, the combo of the pieces together without all the calories of the of a good gesunte bagel, right? Which is a problem in and of itself. But, you know, I promised my doctor I'd stop talking about putting on things that make you fat, heavy, because then I get hungry and I eat. Now, Rav Silverstein also says, when it comes to our soup bowl, he says, of course you can make it into, you can put the soup into the bowl made out of the food, because Abaye in Masechta Megillah did it. Abaye did it. He says, when he went to Mar Bar Mar's home, he ate 60 dishes. And Mari Bar Mar's home, he ate 60 dishes. He liked the last one so much he wanted to eat the plate. So the Marsha notes that he wasn't kidding. The plate was made out of rock candy, which gets you back to your Twizzlers question. A similar story is told about Simon Rothschild. Simon Rothschild was in Germany, and there was a Talmid Chacham from Minsk, Rav Gershon Tanchum, who came to his house for a Friday night meal. He comes to the table, there are no goblets, no silver goblets on the table, just these things that look like dirt. Right? He thought they were like, in this great Gevir's house, this is what they're doing. And it turns out that after they make Kiddush, they break off pieces of the cup and they start eating it. Turns out, the cups, I imagine it was chocolate, but the cups were part of candy and they sweetened the wine. Right? So we have sources to make dishes out of food. Right? So it would follow if you use your Twizzler as a straw, it's really not going to be a difficulty. Why? Because maybe that's different. But, says Rav Silberstein, maybe you can argue, as I did before, when it comes to bread, we're more machmir. And when it comes to bread is not specifically made for the purpose. An ice cream cone is never a problem. You know why? From the time you create an ice cream cone, it's called
ice cream cone.
Right? And so therefore, the whole purpose is there for it to hold ice cream. Right? So Rav Silverstein says you can use the bread bowl, but you have to use the following conditions. The bread that is not used in the creation of the bowl has to be eaten. If it's not, it's us to create the bowl. That's Dr. Wenger's piece, and Rav Silverstein agrees. Two, the entire bowl needs to be eaten after the soup is eaten. Yeah, otherwise, it's a zilzul in the bowl.
So what's more important, to eat the bowl or not to eat a chila gasa?
I guess he says use a soup bowl. That's what's more important. If you're not sure, three, the bread needs to be enhanced by the soup, right? If it's only shtick, it can't be done. But usually, that's not a problem when you're using soup. Because I can't think of a soup that's not where the bread is not enhanced. It should just be pointed out that Ramosha Feinstein in Yoridei Chele Gimel Simenai and Aleph adds that thinking about food too much destroys a person because he or she develops a taiva of things that aren't necessary in life and he or she wastes time on them, which in turn ruins one's midos and turns him or her into a chaya ra. I feel bad for Ramosha because the proliferation of cookbooks that have exploded since his death, right, is really something that I wonder what he would think about as he thinks about it. B'sman hazeh. Sof davar kol nishma. If you want to go ahead and do so. Use the bread bowls, right? It can flow like manna from heaven, lechem min hashamayim, which is the basis for the comparison, but it's something to think about. Okay, we'll stop here. B'ezras Hashem, we will continue. Big mazel tov to you guys on your upcoming
Shabbat. Have a wonderful Shabbat.